Welcome to Life and Limb, a podcast from Thrive Magazine, all about living well with limb loss and limb difference. I'm Jeff Thiessen, publisher of Thrive Magazine and your podcast host. My guest this episode is a talented hairstylist and a survivor of domestic violence, which cost her part of her right hand. Larissa Camp found herself fleeing for her life from violence with an ex-boyfriend shooting her at close range twice with a shotgun. She suffered life-altering injuries, including the loss of four fingers. But with strength and determination, she's found her purpose. And as Larissa says, I was given a story to share with the world in hopes of inspiring others to move forward despite challenges they may face. Larissa, welcome. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Good.
You were born in Missouri and you live in Atlanta, which makes you our first international guest on the podcast. So we're thrilled about that. But that's right? You're living in Atlanta now.
I am in Atlanta, yes.
Okay. And that's where you're
going on 20 years.
20 years, you said?
Going on 20 years, yes.
Okay. Well, that correlates with when you're injury happened, right? And it's about 20 years.
Yes, that is correct. 20 years exactly.
Is that right?
Yes. Okay.
I know faith has been a real pillar in your life, and not to sound cliche, but a saving grace in your trauma and recovery after the shooting. And before we talk about that, let's start with your childhood and your teen years. I understand that they might have been difficult. I don't know if that's an overstatement or understatement, but you left home at 17. And
yeah,
tell us a little bit about that and how faith, as I understand it, likely saved your life for the first time back then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I would have to say that my childhood years, I felt were very lonely, yet at times adventurous, because I found myself just really inquisitive and curious about a lot of things in life. Unfortunately, the town that I grew up in didn't have a whole lot of to offer for the youth, except for your local sports, basketball, track. And those things I participated in and I excelled in. So probably right around about high school, I decided that, I wanted to explore different things of life. I wanted to explore relationships, and probably about, 14, became a little bit rebellious. I remember having the track coach actually come to the house offering to buy me a letter jacket if I ran track for the next year, because he just needed me on his team, he said. And, I knew I was quick. I used to beat all the boys up until probably about high school. And it was fun. But I just had other interests. And honestly, right about that time, I became familiar with a gift that I had. Didn't know I had this gift to do hair. And I started to kind of explore in that as well. And started to invite people within the community over to the house, and they would get their hair done. And I was getting paid at 13, and it was great. Also had my first job working as a housekeeper in the Econo Lodge with my parents' consent, of course. And I think, Jeff, all of those things combined really gave me this freedom and sense of independence, and knowing that there was more in life and that the possibilities were limitless. But where I was really frustrated. I hated school. I wasn't a fan. So at 17, I did move out. That became, with being rebellious too, and just kind of bucking up against my parents and not want to listen to what they were trying to tell me. And, I went through this whole spiel. I remember at a certain point, growing up and seeing my mom really, dedicate her life to the Lord. And we were always there like four times a week. And that was kind of getting on my nerves too, because I couldn't understand why we were in a position where we didn't really have a lot. But my mom was steadily giving. And what I thought of, or perception of the church at the time, was, if you give to the Lord, you're going to be blessed. But we were not blessed. So in a sense, I really didn't believe in God. And just so happened, moving out and just getting into different things of life, becoming promiscuous, and it led probably right up to the situation where I got into this relationship. And that's where I believe God started to reel me back in. And I had to learn what faith really was.
There was some experimentation, right, with
Oh, yeah.
substances and such that,
Oh, yeah.
yeah. Well, let's, and thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about that experience with domestic violence. He
Sure.
was your ex-boyfriend who you had left several
Yeah.
times and returned to. And the night of the shooting, you were responding to an ask for help from him. So you went back to his house. Why did you do that, and what happened?
Oh, wow. So the night that I went back to the ex-boyfriend, this is probably the maybe second time leaving. And if I could kind of go back to the what you mentioned about experimentation. So before I met this gentleman, I had gotten involved in drugs and alcohol. And I had gotten to a point in my life where I became tired and I wanted to change. And just so happened, I was one day on my way to a family reunion and the tire of my car had blown out. That's how I met this gentleman. And you know, in my mind, I was thinking he was a knight in shining armor. He pulled up, he decided, you know, he was going to help me change my tire and all that was great. And I was, you know, totally excited that someone could pull over to help me because I was traveling alone, as a female, and kind of upset at the fact that, you know, the people that I thought were with me weren't really with me. Nobody answered the phone. You know, I had limited money, but that was the same time as well when I was really at this place in my life. I was tired of the drugs. I was tired of alcohol. I was just tired of my life, probably about 22. And I knew I needed a change. So as it relates to just kind of moving forward into this relationship and, you know, going the back and forth and eventually the relationship that I had began with this trucker, which is what he was, wasn't great. We had off and on fights. There was drugs and alcohol that was involved. Maybe not as heavily as what as it was when I was, you know, before I had met him, but still it was involved. It was a serious thing. And I did leave that relationship. I noticed because there was some abuse that was taking place. And when I did go back, it was to help him. It was to help him the night he called me stating that he was sick. Now, I knew everything within me was telling me to not, you know, engage, but I think there was a sense of still yet codependence there. Through this process of healing and through really kind of reminiscing and reflecting through it all, what I'm seeing is that, you know, the drugs and alcohol, that's kind of like a codependent behavior and just kind of this relationship codependent. It took some a process of time for me to really be able to realize that that's what that was. It wasn't because I just needed this person. I think it more so had to deal with the sense of identity and how I found my identity and worth and power, maybe even. So going back to helping him, why I went back, I still had a sense of, you know, wanting to do good things. I knew I was raised right. I was raised in the church. I wanted to make sure that this person wasn't hurt or didn't hurt himself. I just knew he didn't sound right. And I've never heard that before. So I decided to go. And something in me that night said, do not go. And of course, I didn't listen. I just kept going. And that probably was one of the things I sometime wish I could have taken back. Just not knowing, but yeah.
So you went to help him, and he had other designs, right? And
Oh, he had another mission. Yes, he did. So his thing was, I got to the house, and one thing that I'd noticed that I've never seen before was that there was a front porch light that was off. And as soon as I got out of the car and walked to the door, he meets me at the door. I barely knocked, but he opened the door slowly and just kind of looked at me with this blank stare, and he invites me in. So I go into ask him, what's going on? Is everything okay? And he says, won't you just come in and have a seat and I'll go get dressed. He had t-shirts and a t-shirt and some shorts on. So I go upstairs and I sit down. And the next thing that I know, he's taking a little bit of time downstairs. He took about 10 minutes. And I'm sitting here watching the Steve Harvey show. And next thing I know, he comes back upstairs and he just lays on the couch. And I'm looking at him kind of bewildered, like, you called me. And at the time, I worked for an ambulance company, taking calls for people that needed, help getting to the doctor, which is the irony. It's kind of
Oh,
crazy.
yeah.
And I didn't think too much of it. But finally, he pulls out this form, and him and his mother had just returned from the doctor's office. He gives me the form and says, the doctor said that I have acid reflux. My mother just bought me back, and I need this prescription filled. I said, okay, well, whatever it is you need, let's go ahead and handle it. And, I can take you to get this taken care of. Otherwise, I have some other things, I need to really do. So he decides that that wasn't good enough of an answer. He decides to light up six cigarettes back to back. And after the sixth one, he begins to ask me, well, why don't you move back in with me? Why don't, you just please forgive me for everything I've done. And, after going through those motions, I've kept telling him, no, it's never going to work. We've really been through a lot. I'm just here to help you. I mean, it's fine. I forgive you. We can be friends or whatever, but I'm not interested in really a relationship. And I believe that's what set him off, Jeff. So he decides that he's going to walk to the closet and pull out a shotgun. And I'm looking at him, honestly, in a sense of disbelief, because at the time that we were in the relationship together, he's made plenty of threats and attempts at my life, not just, physically and verbally. But also there were times where, he had just bought up different stories of different people, family members even, that things have happened to, and I knew he was not really over that. He hadn't processed that. So I think that was more of the emotional manipulation to get me to have some sort of sympathy or empathy for him and what he was experiencing, even though that happened in his childhood. But kind of moving forward, there was a part of me that didn't really believe that what he was doing, he was about to do because of it, because he's always made threats until he reached in his pocket and pulled out a shell. And he reached in the pocket, he pulled the shell, loaded the gun up. And the next thing that I know is that the gun is pointing towards my face. So I'm like, okay, what are you going to do with that? And he said, you don't have to worry about screaming. You don't have to worry about calling your family. Matter of fact, your family don't even care about you. This is your last day. You're not going to live anymore. And when he said those words to me, I instantly jumped up from the chair I was sitting in, and we began to fight with the gun at the top level of the house. Until we made it to one of the back bedrooms that was empty. And next thing I know, something said, look up. I looked up, the gun was pointing at my face, and I put my hand in front of the gun. And when I put my hand in front of the gun went off. And the next thing that I knew is that there was nothing but smoke. My ears were ringing. My goodness. I really couldn't see and really couldn't comprehend what was going on. I knew something happened, but I really didn't feel any different. I just had this sense to stop and look to see what happened. And when I looked down at my hand, my fingers were crumpled. I think one was missing. My ring finger was missing. And fight or flight kicked in. I knew I had to get out of there. I knew I could still run. So next thing I did was I fought my way out. And believe it or not, this guy was just standing there looking at me, bewildered, as if he could not believe what he had just done. So we make it to the bathroom and we kind of tussle there. And the next thing I know, I'm making it to the front door. And the whole time I had my purse in my other arm. Why, I don't know, but I had my purse with me. And as soon as I make it to the door, it's a split level home, and I'm turning to open the door and realize, gosh, this door is so hard to open. Why can't I open this door? And when I turn around and look, he's reloading the gun a second time. And at this point in time, it was so unbelievable to see that this man now no longer had anything visible in his eyes that revealed to me that he was there. The eyes were black, Jeff. And I knew that this was no longer something human that I was battling against. Next thing I knew, I screamed out the name Jesus as loud as I could. And out of nowhere, I was able to muster up a strength to push this man down into the basement. He lost his gun, and I proceeded to open the door. Now, something said, stop, turn around and look. I turned around to look. He was standing behind me with the gun pointed directly towards my back. And with this, the bullet now had went off, had went through the left side of my arm, a few layers of skin on the chest, and through the door, and it actually turned me back towards the front door. And after I saw this, I knew I was able to run. There was no holes in my body. Even though the arms, the hand was going on, I still could run. I had my purse with me, opened the door, and I took out running as fast as I could. So I ended up going to a neighbor's house, and I was running. I was breathing hard. I think it was like 104 degrees out that night. And I was just wanting to die. Everything in me wanted to give up, but it's like my legs was, they were not letting go of this fight. So I kept going and I made it to this house and no one answered. The TV was blaring loudly. So I knew someone was there. I knew they heard gunshots go off and I knew they knew I was outside. Well, the next thing that I knew was that I heard sirens in the distance. So as soon as I heard the sirens, I began to run towards the street and I'm screaming and I'm pleading and I'm screaming, crying for help. And the next thing I know is like this voice came to me telling me you will live. And it was the voice that I heard that gave me this peace, knowing that someone was coming for me. I knew that I was saved.
You've talked about how I should have been dead and gone.
Yeah.
That's your quote. And for
Yeah.
you to share this incredibly personal story with such vivid detail, and I know you share it often in work that you do on stage and in talking about domestic violence. But how first did you come to process it, and how even 20 years later are you able to? Seemingly comfortable, and I don't want to make assumptions, but seemingly comfortably share this with others continuously.
Yeah, this is kind of hard to believe, but when I talk to my mother, I tell her the same thing. I say, Mom, I feel like I knew I was there, but it was almost as if I was watching it happen. It was almost as if I was watching a movie happen before me. And how I'm able to share this, I know that it's no power or strength truly of my own to even sit here before you and this was not the plan of life for me. Yes, I should have been dead and gone. And not just probably from that instance, Jeff, I think from even younger, even before the time, even when I was before this relationship, maybe in drugs and alcohol. Whatever. I mean, there were so many things, so many situations that have happened in my life that I knew that it was nothing but the grace of God, His hand over my life, to give me this awesome story and to be able to entrust me with it. So therefore, there's times I know in different situations and arenas that I don't want to leave anything out. However, I know it's about the overcoming. But sometimes I think the wake-up call, and for many people in domestic violence situations, men and women, is that you have to, sometimes you got to go there to let them understand and see and know, that this thing is really real. You can't really play around with, going back and forth and being unsure. It's all about finding your purpose. And I truly, truly thank God for the story because the story has brought purpose to my life. It enables me to be able to serve others in many different facets of life and situations.
Wow, that's a really powerful answer, and from such a raw story. You also said that you have a lot to be thankful for, and I'm hearing that in what you're saying, and in the direction that life has gone since that. And you know, I also mentioned that you do a lot of public speaking, and so when you're up on those stages or sharing your story with media, as you often do, what is that message that you want people to hear? What do you want them walking out of that arena with, or you know, away from that television interview or the article they read in the newspaper? What is it?
So what I want people to really grasp and understand, and most importantly, be inspired to find your purpose, to know that you have worth, to know that your worth and identity is not tied to the status of a job or a relationship, or the drugs and alcohol, or whatever it might look like. I think because of the perceived lack of things that, and voids that people have in their life, and maybe not because of things that they bought upon themselves, things they were inherited. Most importantly, is that, you too have purpose and worth. And I think finding significance is more important than trying to be successful, trying to, influence the masses of people and not really have a message that brings transformation. To some degree, in the lives of others.
I would imagine that doesn't necessarily mean a traumatic experience like you have.
No.
Like a shooting, you don't have to hit that kind of rock bottom, right?
No. Not at all. Not at all. And that's the thing. So, and this is no fault of anyone's. Like I mentioned a little earlier, I was raised in a city that was small, didn't have a lot of opportunities. It did have track, it did have basketball. They had things. But I guess, too, as a family unit, there was some of that in my family. There was some of that growing up. So the idea and perspective that I got of relationships that was inherited to myself was, this is how you take care of your mate. This is how you submit. And it wasn't taught verbally. It was something that was nonverbal. So it's almost like biting your nails, for instance. Someone, you see someone doing it, you grew up, you are probably predisposed to doing it. It's not because you're taught that it's wrong or that it's right. It's just something that happens. And unfortunately, you don't need a traumatic story to do that. It's all about finding the things that you like. What are your interests? What are your hobbies? And be steadfast in that, because in that, I truly believe that the people, the places, the alignments that need to happen that will cater and support the vision of the person will help them to move forward into that thing that they call, I guess, their life's purpose.
I want to talk more about that life's purpose, because for you it goes beyond this messaging that we're talking about. But before we leave the domestic violence side of the story, there's so much important experience that you share when it comes to early signs, red flags for both men and women that they shouldn't ignore in those kind of environments and maybe toxic climates. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you said you saw them, they were there. Why you ignored them or not, that's maybe another discussion. But what are some of those things that you recognized as being this ain't right?
I didn't recognize it then. Like I said, even though I was raised in that situation, mine was totally different. It was kind of the opposite. It was more so catered to a desire that I always had growing up to have that healthy relationship, to be supported, to be taken care of. So some of the flags that I saw or became aware of was starting in moving in those relationships arenas too fast. For instance, he wanted a commitment. He wanted to commit fairly quickly. We did live together soon, within 2 to 3 months. And the next thing I know, we were going out to purchase rings. And I didn't ask for it. It was like I was forced to go. So it was forcing the commitment, trying to get the agreement for the commitment soon, really laying heavy those past stories of past relationships and family trauma, you know, to really bond emotionally. What was some other things? Expensive gifts, giving me the credit card to go shopping, just really trying to cater to me and find out some of the things that I truly desired. Even Jeff going to church, and I kind of hate to say that, but I mean it does happen in all arenas. What that was one of the things I really wanted in my next relationship. So that was something I was very vocal about, and he catered to that need. And it was great until, you know, he tried to use the religion against me. So, yeah. And it's a lot more, but
Did he isolate you from family and friends? Was that part of it or not necessarily?
you know what he did? He isolated me from family and friends by first of all, inviting me to move in, and then needed to be made aware of when I spoke with them, what we talked about. But also, he attempted to get my family on his good side. So, no matter what he did, no matter what he said, it was almost like for Christmas, he wanted to hand out envelopes of money, trying to, you know, buy their participation, what have you, in this toxic relationship. But that's also one of those things. And it worked for a minute until it didn't. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, thanks for sharing that. I think that it's so important to
Yeah.
hear from someone that has experienced it like you. Let's talk about life now. You're a
Sir?
mom, a working mom, a career that some might think is a bit unusual, considering your amputation, challenging at least for a hand amputee, that being a hairstylist. So tell us about your family, your working life as a hairstylist. What are some of the interests, other interests in your life? What do you do? What's a day in the life like for Larissa Camp?
Yeah, so my family, first of all, they're really supportive. Taking that step to go to school for hair. And I think earlier question you asked about faith, and it truly was a step of faith for me. My grandmother had mentioned, Larissa, you know, you're still doing hair. You're doing a great job. Why don't you just go to school? And that was crazy because in my mind, who is going to accept a stylist that doesn't have their hand? I mean, I've just never heard of, we don't hear about this. This is crazy. And you know, I prayed about it and I said, you know what? Maybe she's onto something here. And not because I want attention, because no, I was the person that was hiding. I was every chance I got, I hid. I wasn't comfortable with my hand in this because I didn't know, you know, it was new. I wasn't sure what people would think, let alone I was already looking at myself wrong. So anyway, I took my grandmother's advice and I enrolled. And it was scary because I was faced with you know, standing up to others who had all of their digits. And one day I, you know, met a shear company. They came in and they helped out. And I'm sure we're going to do that, you know, a little bit later. But anyway, my family is very supportive. And my son actually helped to give me the courage to really stand up in so many ways.
How
So
so? How did he do that, Larissa?
yeah, wow. Okay. Well, my son was probably about 9. And he would always encourage me in this way, like, Mom, come on, you can do it, or you can do it in a way. In a sense, I would kind of shy back from really spending the time with him that was, you know, like normal play because I wasn't sure that I could catch a ball. You know, it was those little things. And By chance, I was working with a lady who was helping me edit a couple things. And I would go into another room and kind of share with her details about, well, I want this included here and you can put that there. And one day my son comes up to me. He's probably about 11. He says, "Mom, what are you talking about? Who are you talking to?" And I said, I'm talking to a lady about a book I'm writing." "Oh, well, what's the book about?" And at this time, I knew Jeff. I kept it from him. And I know he was young and I knew he wouldn't grasp and understand all of the details, but there were certain things I could share. And I think just growing up, I would tell him, just make sure that you listen, you pay attention, because there's a lot of things that could happen in life, and just ensure that you're on the right track and you know what you want to do. That sense of encouragement until I had to tell him the truth. And when I told him, he sat there and he stared at me. He said, "Mom, you know what? I already know." And I was bewildered, like, "Son, how did you? What do you mean? What do you mean? How do you know? Did somebody tell you?" "Well, no. One day I was on YouTube and I saw you on there and you were sharing your story. So I already know. I just wanted you to tell me." And I was taken away. I was blown away, Jeff. I was blown away. And that also was another revelation, so to speak, for me, that I needed to start speaking out. I needed to start taking those steps forward. I didn't have to be afraid. I think I was trying to shield and protect even my son from what I experienced, because I loved him so much. I didn't want him to be afraid. I didn't want him to experience any type of doubt, or and maybe those were just emotions and thoughts that I was having. But least to say, he has been a total source of inspiration and still is to this day, along with my family. But what I have learned is that there's nothing that I can't do. I hike. I love cars. Of course, I love hair. I love gardening. There are so many interests that I do have. I think zip lining has like been the latest thing for me. So, there's just so much more to learn and to really reach forward to, interest wise. But I truly am thankful that my family has been a supportive group and warriors that stand in my corner.
Yeah, I'm glad I asked, probed about your son. That's
Yeah.
remarkable that he was such a impetus in you moving on, I guess, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And now I want to. I want to do that, even though, he's a boy. But what greater witness are we as parents to trials and adversity and challenges and overcoming that than actually being the demonstration and not just telling the kids, you need to go do this, you need to try this, you need to go to college. Well, what do they have to really strive for? What gives them that grounding? So, yeah, I had to step up.
Obviously, you're an incredible role model for him that he found on YouTube.
Day and age we live in, my God.
It sure is.
Nothing, Satan.
So I just wanted to wrap up a question again around purpose, and you've talked a lot about that already, but it's been 20 years now, and I'm hearing you say it's been such a learning journey, I guess might be a way to put it. And are there things you're still learning, and that purpose, I understand what it means and looks like to you. What can it mean for others? Just to kind of as a segue to a thanks for being here on the show and sharing with our listeners. So what are you still learning about yourself, and what kind of message or purpose can that mean for others?
What I'm learning is that I still have a lot to learn. I still have a lot to learn in many different areas. That most importantly, never doubting your ability to do anything. And I mean, if I could, one of the scriptures that I had wrote down was out of 2 Corinthians 12 and 9. It says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more in my infirmities, that Christ's power may rest on me." And for me, that's the purpose of it all. We are given situations in life, not because we're bad and we deserve it, or God wants a good laugh. Maybe that's, I don't know. But we're given those things because he knows how we will handle them. And when you ask about what do you want people to understand or to know about purpose, I think that it is resilience, and that we're all born with a measure of resilience. Whatever it is that we go through, is to be used for a greater purpose, to obviously, not magnify ourselves, but there's a strength that's found in that due to a process that you will go through. And who knows how long it takes. For me, it took 10 years. And I'm finding that there's other areas where it's taken a little longer, and that's fine. To really come to the acceptance of the hand that I was dealt, what I am to achieve or what I am to do. And what I don't know, more will be added along the way. So just knowing that this story was given to me, and many stories given to others, whatever their situations are, their life challenges, whatever they have overcome, there is purpose for that pain. There's purpose for the temporary setback. There's purpose for things that we don't truly understand. But I think being reflective is what helps us to get to a place where we see and we know that, there is a level of resilience that's there, that makes us even the more stronger, even the more wiser, even the more greater. And there's no competition. There's no competition. We all have our own fingerprint for a reason. And we may not be able to map out every single line, but it's not really our job to do that. It's our job to really appreciate and be thankful and grateful and use what we have. And the more that we step out on that and exercise those talents, more will be given because we're entrusted now to handle that. So I'm hoping this answers your question, but as I'm especially reflecting on the scripture there, there's nothing that I can do in and of myself, but I'm willing to be available. So.
What an incredible message. And I think there's, you can see the emotion coming out of you in what you just said. And I love what you just said about we all have our own fingerprint. There's no guide or roadmap. It's all very personal, isn't it? And digging deep within. So, wow, I am not going to say any more because I will only water down what you just said and left us with. But you've left me a bit emotional too today. So, Larissa, thank you so much for agreeing to join me, and thank you for all you do for others.
Thank you.
Folks, great website to learn more and connect with Larissa, Larissa Camp. But the website is LarissaLoveNotes.com, just like it sounds. Two S's in Larissa, LarissaLoveNotes.com. So again, Larissa, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. I so appreciate this. Thank you.
You are welcome. And with that, this has been Life and Limb. Thank you for listening. You can read about others who are thriving with limb loss or limb difference and plenty more at thrivemag.ca. And you'll find our previous podcast episodes there as well. Until next time, live well.